Okay, listeners, hello, welcome. This is Rabbit Hole. We got three rabbits down in the burn here today. The usual two rabbits, me, Pete Davis. I'm here with Sparky Abraham. Hello, Sparky.
Hey, Pete.
We're also joined by our wonderful producer and now co-host for the upcoming series, Dan Thorne. Hello, Dan. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Howdy. My name's Dan. I'm new to this side of the glass, though maybe you've heard me do some of the brought to you buys. Yeah, I edit the show. Very excited to talk with you both in this series.
I know Dan. Dan's been editing with us since back in the Current Affairs days. I know Dan because he was kind of the king of radio when I was in college. And I also recorded an abandoned folk project at his studio back in Somerville, Massachusetts. He used to own a wonderful recording studio.
Everybody, let's get hashtag release the Pete Davis folk album trending. We'll figure out a good hashtag. It's a great record.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you. And so we are here, Dan. Maybe we could start the series by talking about why you wanted to join for this series. What the series, big reveal, our third series we're opening up, is called Is Effective Altruism Right or Is It Good? Are we going to do right or good?
Is it effective?
Is it altruistic? Oh, jinx.
We could call it Is Effective Altruism Effective Altruism. Maybe we could call it Is EAEA or something.
Yeah.
Is Effective Altruism?
Hey.
Is. That's amazing. I have my reasons why I think this should be a good one, which I'll get into. But for now, Dan, since you wanted to join for this, why were you attracted to this topic?
Yeah, so I mean, I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, or I actually live in Somerville to the north, but you know, I work in Cambridge.
Cool brother of Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yeah, over the last decade or so that I've lived here since college, I have met people who have been effective altruists. I think just randomly, I was booking a musician at my recording studio in like 2013 or something. That was maybe the first time I heard this term, because I went to his website and he was talking about, you know, oh, book me for your concert. But then also, here's my page where I talk about earning to give. And I have pledged to put this amount of my earnings as a software engineer for Google to, you know, the most efficient charities for alleviating global hunger and poverty and other causes. So, you know, it made me curious to learn a little bit more about it. And I admit, I still don't know much of the territory here, but I know it's kind of in the water, especially where I live, you know, among educated techie folks, seems to be kind of the target audience of people who both are pro effective altruism and also who seem to have strong opinions against it. And recently I've been hearing a little bit more about effective altruism in the news, hearing about different celebrities like Elon Musk, who appear to have some views in favor of it or in favor of things that are similar to it. And I've also heard a number of people expressing some skepticism about different aspects of it. I've also heard about some things that I believe might be related, but may not be necessarily EA, might be different offshoots or subdivisions, like this idea of long-termism, of owing certain things to the future of humanity, and kind of thinking in a very, very broad scale about, you know, the potential future of humans in space and all across the galaxy. And I'm not quite sure if that's totally the same thing as effective altruism, but it seems like the people who are interested in long-termism seem to think that effective altruism is a method of getting there.
Yeah, we're going to weave together the nonprofit industrial complex, chickens, Rocco's basilisk, and space colonization into one intellectual subculture here, which is why it's kind of an interesting thing to look into. You know, what it reminds me of that you've heard a lot about it in Cambridge and Somerville is a little bit of a tangent, but there's this idea called the new sphere. Have you guys heard about this?
Mm-mm. No.
It's like the idea that there's like the geosphere, which is like rocks. I'm getting this totally wrong. There's someone who came up with this idea. I'll put it in the show notes. There's something like the geosphere, and out of the geosphere, there are environments that the biosphere will emerge. So like you start with just like the rocks and the chemicals, and then out of that comes the animals. And then out of the animals comes the new sphere, which is the ideas. And the idea of the new sphere was originally posited to say, like, ideas have a life of their own. They live in certain environments, just like how animals live in certain geological environments. Ideas live in certain human environments. And it's very funny that, like, you see the subculture popping up in very techie environments. So it's like you would say, oh, you know, this is a swampy area. We might see some toads here, or we might see some blue herons here. It's like, oh, you get a heavily academic city with a huge tech culture and some Google offices. And oh, we see EA spawning here too. And I don't say that derogatorily. You could say that about any of the different subcultures. It's very funny how they emerge in certain places. No surprises at all that it's emerging in your neck of the woods.
Everyone keep an eye out for the, look, be on the lookout for some EA. I think we might see some examples on our tour here coming up.
Okay, Sparky, how have you heard about EA, and what is your experience with EA?
I don't know.
Have you heard of it at all,
Sparky? I've heard of it. I've had very good friends who have gotten very into it. I think it's one of these things that, like, on the surface level description, and particularly in the name, it's like, yeah, of course, effective altruism. Why wouldn't you want your altruism to be effective?
Good branding. Why yeah. wouldn't you want your monetary theory modern?
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, we're just going to try to figure out how to do the most good. Like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. But then, you know, including with the people who I've seen get into it, it sort of just spins out very quickly into things that seem on their face absurd to me, that have some, you know, sort of convoluted logical argument as to why they're correct. This is also, I think, only kind of peripherally related, but have you guys seen, like, the stuff from the negative utilitarians?
No. Tell us.
No. So I think this is like a small subset of the EA community, are these people who think that basically like pleasure doesn't count. Basically, like, the only thing that counts is the elimination of suffering. That's what you want to accomplish. But if you take that really seriously, then it turns out that actually the best possible outcome is to eliminate all life in the universe, as long as you can do it painlessly, because zero is the best you can get.
Yes.
So there's like a bunch of people who write about that, that my friend Howie introduced me to.
There seems to be a constellation of different sub niches within this subculture.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Roko's Basilisk earlier, Pete, but it seems like there's a lot of different strange rabbit holes that people who are concerned about artificial intelligence are taking, where they're kind of making, you know, a bunch of thought experiments that lead to some very strange conclusions about potential AI overlords or super intelligences or friendly AIs that might save and uplift us all. And it seems like people are diverging in a lot of different directions there. And it seems like artificial intelligence is one of the kind of flashpoint topics that it seems like people within effective altruism and critics thereof are debating the merits of, or how important it is. You know, should we spend money on mosquito nets, or should we spend money on preventing a AI from taking over all of society?
Part of what we're exploring here is I kind of want to get to the place of, like, why are those, you know, it seems like there are three big, you know, and all of this, you know, for those who are just tuning into Rabbit Hole for the first time, our first episodes are our least informed episodes. So we're trying to get informed here. You know, we might not be the best. That's what all the future episodes are about. But we like being transparent about our opening thoughts. And, you know, the opening thing I understand is there seems to be three practical things that are big in the EA community. One is, I would argue, you know, they're all charismatic and compelling in their own ways. But, you know, very compelling is, you know, can we get more efficient in global health and economic development, like global economic development, and in the way that, you know, wealthy, often Western, you know, philanthropists and donors spend their money more efficiently. The second is animal welfare, which seems like just, you know, there's an animal welfare movement before EA, but I don't see much. It seems to have a lot of overlap with just the general animal welfare movement. And then this third is this existential risk. So people, which, you know, often is talking about AI overlords. And I'm interested in, like, what is the source that led them to those three popular things, and not, say, you know, unionizing your workplace, closing the gender wage gap, you know, getting rid of mass incarceration, let alone any other issue.
Yeah. If I can piggyback off of that for a second, I think this sort of where politics fits into effective altruism is a question that is open for me. And I'd be very curious to hear how people from pro or anti, positive or skeptical perspectives think about it. And maybe just to give a very, very brief introduction, if you're not familiar with the concept of effective altruism, basically the gist of it, as far as I can tell, is, you know, there are several parts of it, but people are trying to figure out, you know, how you can spend money to provide the most positive effects, support charities or nonprofits that sort of do the most good using sites like GiveWell, where you can sort of try to maximize your return on like a money that you're individually donating or a cause you're supporting that might, you know, help the most and, you know, get the most of your money towards whatever cause you're trying to help. And then, you know, also thinking about what causes might make the most immediate impact on the world. And part of that also seems to go hand in hand for many people with a sort of giving pledge to donate a certain amount of your money every year to causes that you believe are, you know, efficient like this. And in some cases, it seems like people might even try to, as almost a moral imperative, seek out a job that makes as much money as possible. Maybe rather than becoming a public defender, you take that big law job, not just to pay off your law school debt, but also so that you can give tens of thousands of dollars every year to buying mosquito nets for people in regions where there's high incidence of malaria. And, you know, that can save potentially hundreds of thousands of lives with your money. And, you know, I think that's an open question of, well, maybe there's a good reason to be a public defender, even if you don't have as much money to spend on your mosquito nets. But also, it seems like a lot of the pro-EA practice kind of is centered around like individual giving, charitable giving to non-governmental, nonprofit organizations. And it seems to me like the state is kind of absent from a lot of these discussions. Like, whereas I see, you know, and I see it as an open question that, like, well, if you, you know, believe that these causes are important for saving lives, you know, could there be ways to, you know, yeah, try to like pressure your government on a national level to support foreign aid or to, I don't know, pay reparations to countries that have been underdeveloped? You know, why is there malaria in parts of sub-Saharan Africa and not in the United States? Well, is that something that should also be addressed by like international relations as well as just individual charitable giving? Or is the state just hopelessly caught up in bureaucracy and red tape and individual contributions or nonprofits or people with a tech startup mentality are the only way to fix these big problems?
Yeah, it's funny. It's like it is in one corner. It's like deinstitutionalized. It's like assuming there's no institutional landscape of the world that all is pushing into everything else. You know, there are so many institutions. There's the UN, there's international relations, there's all the states, there's all the cultural institutions, there's building technology, there's the dissemination of technology, there's the academy, there's the public health system, like what Paul Farmer does. On the surface, at least, we're all talking about vulgar EA here. I'm sure there's kind of interesting takes inside of it. The vulgar understanding of EA, it seems to not include that. You know, I've always had this question when I've approached it, which is, you look back at the most influential people, and I don't know if they would have gotten there by following these principles. So, you know, I'm pulling up a list of the 100 most influential people according to this famous book called The 100. I'm not saying I agree with this, but it's just a good source of a random subset of influential people, many of whom were not altruists, but influential and impactful. Here's the list, you know, just taking a random 10. Muhammad, Christ, Newton, Confucius, Gutenberg, Einstein, Pasteur, Aristotle, Augustus Caesar, Copernicus, James Watt, you know, Voltaire, Lenin, Peter the Great, you know, Vasco da Gama, Gorbachev, Homer, Henry Ford, Mao, Francis Bacon, you know, and pulling up random, just listing random people. You know, you notice some things in there, like some had spiritual revolutions, some were political leaders, some were inventors. You know, I think if they thought, like, what's the most effective way I could have an impact by the current standards of the time, maximizing under one subculture's understanding of, like, what impact is, I don't know if they would have had the impact. But is that a stupid way to think about this? I don't know.
I mean, even aside from sort of, like, I think there's an issue where we're like, you know, what exactly is the impact? What is the good? Whatever. Even setting that aside and just thinking about, you know, who have been the most effective altruists in the past. You know, one thing that comes up for me is like, well, frickin' Andrew Carnegie, for all his other bullshit, like, funded the building of a massive number of public libraries all over the country, many of which still exist and are really important community centers, including like the one in my town. I don't know how, like, I can't imagine that would be something that an effective altruist would decide to do. It's, I mean, yeah, a lot of it comes down for me, and I think we're going to get into it when we start talking to people about the calculations too, is just like, how the fuck do you calculate this stuff? We don't know anything about the future.
Yeah. And it seems to me like, I guess I'm always just trying to, I want to figure out sort of what the territory is here. Like, I feel like I'm trying to do a kind of geographic project where I sort of can map out like the boundaries of EA and like what gets kind of, what can be under in this territory and what's outside of it and what's maybe neighboring but friendly, you know? And it seems to me like what's interesting is that it seems like once, you know, people within EA are thinking these very big, wide open, almost science fictional ideas and embracing possibilities that seem very outside of the kind of Overton window of, you know, what is considered possible in politics, but then also it seems like on other times they have maybe more kind of narrowly pragmatic ideas of what is possible. Well, like, you know, we need to think about ensuring humanity's future in space or ensuring the uplifting of society through computing, but then also thinking, well, we can't trust government action to deliver malaria nets to people. As an individual person giving money, buying nets, I can do that much more efficiently and faster. And maybe I wonder, well, you know, what's at stake in sort of where you're sort of picking your battles for where to think really big and where to kind of accept the present? Like, I think about climate change a lot as, you know, definitely seemingly an existential risk to humanity. And I think maybe some of the more long-termist EAs might actually disagree with me on different features of that. But I think of climate change as one of the biggest, you know, most frightening things for like drastically reducing the amount of pleasure or increasing the amount of pain in society. And, you know, that to me seems like a project that kind of needs more than individual interventions, you know, whether through a Andrew Carnegie level billionaire giving a lot of money to build seawalls or invest in green technology, or to, you know, do-gooding regular people giving money out of their paychecks to I don't know, support green technology or buy shares in Tesla or, you know, whatever they think is a good individual solution. Like, it seems like it requires sort of international cooperation in a way that I'm not sure how EA kind of plans for right now. And it seems like there are some problems where maybe technological solutions can make a big difference and some where you need other kinds of planning. I'm rambling here.
No. This is like, so I think we've identified an opening assumption that we have, which is like the over individual, like EA exists in a very individualist, you know, at least vulgar EA, our understanding of it exists in a very individualist way, or at least presents itself as such to the general kind of viewer of it. One thing I want to get into the kind of general definitions that we understand and the kind of the goals of the exploration, but I also just want to give EA its due, which is, you know, it's very interesting. I know a lot of lefties that like EA. A lot of really good people that like EA. I know a lot of people that it took them out of the sidelines and made them think rigorously about public spiritedness. It, you know, heard of people that have given kidneys, you know, give directly, I believe, has donated over $100 million. You know, it's a much better use of money than, you know, common multimillionaire donations like donating to right-wing candidates to lower taxes. So there's a certain it's given a boost to the animal welfare movement, which is very nice. And I, as a Naderite, you know, Ralph's always been kind of saying we need AI regulations and we're doing all these technologies and we're doing all this boosterism about it. Is anyone, you know, it's kind of like a regulatory public safety spirit of the AI folks. The reason why this is an interesting convo is because, you know, this isn't just, this is a thing that's intriguing.
Yeah, I'm certainly not trying to, I feel like I'm interested in doing this series because, you know, I think there's a possibility that I could be converted, you know, in some way or another. I don't think it's, you know, these are interesting ideas for me. And I think it's a very interesting conversation, you know, so I'm very curious to, in good faith, hear people out and on all sides of the argument and see where the discussion leads. I think these are very, like, talking about even maybe the more far out kind of long-termist ideas that are floating around in this EA space. I think it's really cool that people are publicly having sort of big and, you know, weird conversations about everyday life. And I think it's good to really, like, look at things and think outside the box in this way that, you know, I'm very curious to hear the conversations we'll have on, you know, the different directions the series goes. And that's actually one question, you know, I'm curious to define with all of our interviewees, whether they're sort of dyed-in-the-wool EAers or EA skeptics, or I'm sure we might meet people who are totally bought into some aspects of what is considered the kind of broad EA spectrum, but maybe curious about other things. Well, maybe they're interested in global warming, but maybe haven't thought about artificial intelligence and, you know, I guess I'm always curious to know sort of what the threshold is for what is science fiction and what is, you know, real policy proposals or, you know, kind of, because I imagine there might be some, maybe even some critics of EA who say, well, you know, oh, they all just want to become brains in jars and a technological singularity and colonize Mars. And I imagine there will be a lot of people who will push back about that, will say, well, no, that's kind of kooky. You know, I believe in this level of it. And yeah, maybe no, some people who say, yeah, we want to colonize Mars, but that also doesn't mean we don't care about these things, or, you know, that's an unfair description.
This gets into a question of, like, I always think that, you know, first off, I think politics and religion are kind of on a spectrum together. I don't think there's a difference in kind. I think, you know, Unger has this line where he's like, religion, politics, when taken to the hilt, become, you know, when taken seriously, becomes religious, in the sense that ideology is just the fight over what we believe existence should be about. You know, it implicates all the religious questions. You cannot sever the link between how do you want to design the world and what do you think the meaning of a human life is, the meaning of existence is, what morality is. Every ideology / religion has extreme versions of it, fundamentalist versions of it, orthodox versions, reform, liberal, milquetoast, extreme. It also has, you know, I always think something's going to take off when it doesn't become, you know, there's, it's kind of ironic. Silicon Valley, when they're telling you to form a startup, they tell you to simplify, 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 simplify. You should have one mission. That's what you should be pushing towards. That's all you should be about. And that can get you far in efficiency on a startup. But when it comes to a movement, it you need to get weirder and weirder and weirder and have a bunch of different corners to it, because it allows people to grab on and see themselves in a bunch of different ways that they wouldn't if they let it become normal. I'm seeing that in EA. Like, I'm seeing, like, your hook might be the way of thinking about the world. It might be the less wrong forums. It might be the way you're supposed to – it might be the part about your – you're tied in a mutual obligation destiny with people halfway around the world and the utilitarianism of it. It might be the practical politics of, like, fighting the nonprofit industrial complex. It might be, you know, and it takes on different movements, and you see that with any thick ideology or religion. And I wonder if that assessment of what EA is becoming, kind of a religious political movement, is right. And that's what explains its weirdness, because that's what all serious growing ideology religions are. I don't know if y'all have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that spirituality and maybe religion are, it's definitely something that I'm curious to tease at here, because I think there are a lot of valences that seem kind of similar, or like, you know, this is a group of people who, some of whom are very concerned about existential risks, about averting the end of the world, about, you know, improving people's lives. And, you know, many effective altruists also, you know, literally will tithe their income, almost as if, you know, one might to a church. And I think there are a lot of kind of similarities that I think are interesting to think about, because on the one hand, I feel like a lot of the sort of language of effective altruism is presented in a very sort of scientific or, you know, rational way, in a, you know, sort of secular way. But there's, I think there's a lot of feelings of, you know, trying to help the world in general and avoid an apocalypse or do the most good with your position in the world that I think feel very relevant to practicing members of a religion or people with a spiritual practice. And I'd be very curious to interview anyone who might be involved in EA and maybe also in a religious community to hear them talk more about what similarities and differences they feel.
Yeah, maybe we can get a divinity school scholar to see, like, what is the theology of EA? Yeah. Sparky, any thoughts?
I wonder if there's like a, I don't know, maybe this is just all of us. Maybe this is me. Maybe I'm the ineffective altruist. Can we have an ineffective altruist movement?
Yes. IA.
IA.
Yeah.
I'm trying really hard to do good, but I'm just fucking it up all the time. I mean, that's true. That's actually true.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe you're an Andrew Carnegie style person, and you wanna make a really, really good public library in your town. And, you know, you could save so many more lives if you were giving that money to, you know, another part of your world outside of your community, where, you know, you could spend a little money and help you know, protect a region against flooding, or, you know, provide clean drinking water or something. But maybe you really, really wanna support the arts or letters in your community. You want to build a really cool public library. Is that always, you know, can you never justify that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, there's sort of a moderate version that I'm sure would admit of all that. And then there's the sort of extreme version, which is, you know, sort of a self-denying approach to life and to the world in a way that might actually have a lot of resonance with, I don't know, some religious and particularly like ascetic movements. But, you know, this idea that like everything that I like, you know, oh my God, if I'm spending time doing something that is not saving the most potential lives, like that's a shameful and deeply guilty thing for me to be doing. Yeah. I mean, the spiritual overtones are massive. And it also just reminds me of people who kind of low key take that approach. Like, I talk to law students and kind of newer lawyers all the time who are like, oh, you know, I like doing this work over here, but I just feel like it's so much more effective for me to do this. Like, where can I make the most difference? And it's like, well, you're fucking miserable, you know? Don't be miserable.
This is kind of the problem with technologists, like Uber technologists, is that the engineering mindset optimizes one metric around a goal, optimizes towards an efficient goal. And that many people have written about how that it contradicts another metaphor for what we're doing here, which is the ecosystem metaphor, which is that the goal is wholeness, vibrancy, fecundity, you know, the balance, you know, the trees are doing good, the frogs are doing good, the herons are doing good. You might see that, you know, one part, we're getting overrun by foxes, so we need to tinker with stuff a bit to deal with that, or empower the natural internal aspects that will allow that to resolve itself, things like that. And when I hear about, like, you know, cancer or something is like a, or like the enemy of the ecosystem metaphor is like the homogeneity, the like being overrun by one type of thing, having only one rule the day. And the ecosystem folks will always warn, they'll warn with like folk tales or something. If you do this, it will come back to bite you in another way that you will never see. You might not even be able to trace it back to this thing you're doing, but it will come back to bite you. And when I hear your happiness story, Sparky, it's like you can distend yourself to optimize. Like if you really want to get everything done, you can spend all night getting it all done, but then the next day you have to sleep in, you know? And you know, this is what like so many therapists talk about or something. It's like you have to just find a way to be normal about it, lean in towards the good, see if you can slowly improve, but the extremism will eventually bite you. But you know, the challenge of this is you have examples of people who do extreme things, and it's really cool, and we're really grateful for it. You know, we're grateful for Benjamin Lay, the Quaker prophet who, you know, went around spending his whole energy, you know, fighting for abolition, and that was unbalanced. So I don't, you know, this is the question.
Yeah, I'm on the series so that I can gear up for a future rabbit hole investigation on is evil real.
I love that.
Maybe we get deep.
Yeah. Investigate the devil, demons,
yeah,
dark magic.
the specter haunting Europe that Marx talks about. How literal was he? Yeah, I guess another thing, we're talking about Andrew Carnegie here and, you know, that idea of altruism. And, you know, one other thing to think about, you know, for us with lefty politics is, you know, I don't necessarily think there should be Andrew Carnegies. And
yes.
I think a world where individuals didn't have the huge amount of capital where they could spend tens of billions of dollars out of their personal bank account to fund, you know, human space exploration or any other lofty, noble goal you want. You know, I don't think that's always a good thing.
Yeah, like another example is like, you know, the Andrew Carnegie, it's like, you know, another precedent would be like Martin Luther King or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, or like people who just decided to have an impact in a different way by going small, by doing community organizing, by doing institutional interventions, by doing politics at Franklin Roosevelt or something, you know, any of these, Eugene V. Debs, you know,
yeah,
any
but
of these
folks. They were really fucking up because what they should have done is they should have used their skills to join an investment bank and made as much money as possible. And then they really could have had an impact on the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I am very excited to hear, you know, local booster Pete Davis talk through some of these questions about effective altruism, because I think one of the best things about EA that I've noticed is that it really does have people thinking about the big picture and about thinking of themselves as like political actors on a scope that's bigger than just your country, like thinking about the good of the planet, the good of people in countries that are far away from yours who you may not see on the news, thinking about the welfare of animals or the biosphere in general, that I think is important and a good thing. You know, I think that's admirable, but I think there's also many admirable things that I'm sure Pete can talk more about the values of localism.
No, totally. This is why, you know, if you are listening here and you're getting mad at this conversation because you're such an EA fan, we're about to go interview a bunch of EA people and be convinced otherwise. We're just being transparent about our, in the words of your words, of my vulgar understanding of EA proponents. We are listing our priors. And you know, a big blind spot that I've had a hard time rectifying is how do you rectify all the beautiful things about localism that I've been talking your ear off about for years now with the fact that, you know, with not becoming parochial, with not becoming, you know, creepy nationalist, with not, with acknowledging that, you know, if you just try to live in your little Arcadia or your little Eden in your village, while benefiting from the security and wealth that was taken, you know, from the, you know, global South and others, you know, that's wrong. And, you know, some of these great heroes that were totally non-localists who, you know, decided to fight on the international level. This is something EA is turning people's eyes towards. So this is very interesting. You know, in these final 5 minutes, I just want to know, like, what questions are we hoping to answer with this series? So, you know, I'll go first. I'll say, I want to get good definitions of this, and I want someone to just, like, I'm going to start early with, like, when we talk to pro EA people, I want to get the map of, like, what do you guys internally think are the boundaries of what you're doing? And then I'd also love to just get a sense of the relationship between those different parts of the map, long-termism, animal welfare, you know, risk assessment, just fighting the nonprofit industrial complex, which we love doing too. And then two is I'd love to hear of their like self-conception and how it's like culturally hooked them and turned them on, because people getting turned on to something is in short supply. And I you know, I think it's worth opening up the hood on how people got excited about something larger than, you know, buying the latest thing. And, you know, watching the latest thing on Netflix or whatever. That's what I'm excited to find out. Dan, what are you excited to find out?
Yeah, I think kind of piggybacking off of that, I am excited to hear more, I guess, especially from pro EA folks about what is their organizing strategy, I suppose, or what's their PR agenda, I guess. Like, how do you move your cause forward? And is that through raising awareness to as many people as possible? Or do you try to, you know, convince the Elon Musks or the Jeff Bezos to give, you know, do you consider it more effective to get the Bill Gates of the world to donate tens of billions of dollars? Or do you try to cast a wide net of, you know, people who could maybe give $10 and buy a few malaria nets or tell other people about it? And then, is there any way in which do you have to try to broaden the appeal to reach a wider audience? Or do you find people who get really excited about maybe the weirder or nerdier aspects of it and thinking about the robots and the basilisks and the, you know, whatever else Pete mentioned earlier? So, you know, what is the PR strategy? What's the man on the street pitch for EA? Or is that the wrong question? Maybe you don't go to the person on the street and you go to, I don't know, you convince the people in the halls of power or, you know, the billionaires.
Sam Berkman-Fried, the recent EA billionaire, crypto billionaire. Sparky, anything you want us to figure out on this series?
I really want to talk to some of the people who think that the only correct course of action is to destroy all life in the universe.
We'll find them. Okay. We'll get them on the pod.
Yeah.
I don't know if we want to be deep in a rabbit hole with them for too long, but
listeners, we may be convinced. We will hear
them. Well, everyone, stay tuned. We're right at the top of the rabbit hole here. We're going to go deep, deep down. Again, if you're mad at the end of this episode, tell us who we should talk to. We'll talk to them, maybe. Thank you, everyone. Stay tuned for new episodes coming up.
Yeah, thanks to all of our sponsors over the years. Thanks to Blucifer. Thanks to Torpedo Juice. Thanks to the evil clown of Middletown. Really can't do it without you.
And, appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks to all our Patreon subscribers.
Onward.
Rabbit Hole Podcast is produced by Dan Thorne. Theme music is by Danny Bradley. If you enjoyed this episode of Rabbit Hole, please, please support us at patreon.com/rabbitholepodcast. Help us keep all of our episodes open to everyone. We can't do it without you. If you didn't enjoy this episode of Rabbit Hole, try another episode. Maybe we had an off day.